Welcome to the Plains Sustainability Commission, City of Portland. Glad to be here in Park Rose High School. Go Broncos. The order of business today is the Portland Plan. So we'll have a hearing today. We'll have testimony. If you want to testify, please fill out a card that's like this and provide it to Julie or one of the people in the back, and they'll get it to us. There's 3 minutes that we'll provide you, and we'll close it out 3 minutes to ensure everybody has a chance to testify. If you have written testimony, please give it to Julie, and she'll distribute it to ensure that it's distributed to all of us, included in the written comment period. And at 8:30, we will, if time allows, move to a work session where we'll have a discussion of the testimony that we hear today. But before we start, I'd like to turn it over to Karen and have her give a few words on this beautiful facility.
Well, welcome everybody. It's really with great pride that we have one of the Portland Plan hearings in the home of Bronco Pride here in Park Rose High School. We have some goodies set up for you in the back of the room. So if you get hungry during this time, please feel free to get up and have something to eat. If you'll notice in our commons here, we have flags around the commons, and the flags represent the nations of the students who attend Park Rose High School. And we actually believe we have some missing flags because we continually get students from different countries who come to Park Rose as a mecca of diversity and excellent education. So really, really proud of the facility and proud of the students who attend here. I would like to point out one of our students to you at this time. His name is Max Denning, and Max is in the front row. Max, stand up. And Max is a sophomore here, and when he gets up to testify, he'll be able to tell you a little bit about what his honor has been recently with regards to local government. So welcome to Park Rose.
Thank you, Karen. To get started, we're going to have Joe Zinder provide us an overview of the Portland Plan, how we got here, and a little bit of the components of the Portland Plan. Joe?
Hello?
Great. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. These three words, prosperous, healthy, and equitable, describe the Portland that we believe that we want. And the Portland Plan, which we're going to hear about tonight, is a strategic plan designed to help us reach these goals. It'll help us create well-paying jobs, advance social equity, improve educational outcomes, and support healthy, connected neighborhoods. Tonight, we're going to go over briefly the parts of the Portland Plan. And in this diagram, you can see the three main parts. The Portland Plan is built on a framework for equity. Reducing disparities is at the heart of all of the strategies and actions of the Portland Plan. It includes the second element of three integrated strategies, a strategy about thriving educated youth, a strategy about economic prosperity and affordability, a strategy about healthy connected city, as I said, all built on a foundation of a focus on increasing equity and reducing disparities. And the third part of the Portland Plan are 12 measures of success, which are the measures that we're putting out there to track our progress and understand the conditions that are facing the city. All of those three elements of the Portland Plan are built on the 9 action areas shown at the bottom of this diagram. Those were where we started with the Portland Plan process, and we consider those to be the 9 sort of issues or topics that you need to pay attention to if you want to be a thriving and sustainable city. So why plan now? In the midst of all the challenges that we're facing as a city, is this the right time to be undertaking a big plan? We think absolutely it is, and that's what the Portland Plan is responsive to. We know the challenges that are out there to that we have to address, and actually the change that we're facing now is a good reason to undertake a plan, to know how that we can pivot the city. We have a track record of success as a community that we can build on. We're the first city to adopt a formal climate action plan to lower carbon emissions. We've had innovation in how we handle waste and stormwater. We've had innovation in becoming a center of clean technology as an economic sort of activity. And also, we are a leader in understanding how land use and transportation have to go together. So we have success we can build on, but we also have vulnerabilities that we need to address. For instance, the working poor made up 23% of the Multnomah County households. Median household income for Black or African American households is about one half of the citywide median for all such groups. Portlanders, and we've learned this through the process, have a higher expectations for what our city can deliver in regards to this. 46% of our region's Native American children live in poverty. Once again, that's not good enough. In the 2000 to 2008 business cycle, Portland had very little job growth, 0.1% annual job growth rate. As we heard repeatedly through the Portland plan process, we have our quality of life in Portland is good, but our economic sort of quality is not living up to the other standard. Only 53% of Portland's high school students graduate in 4 years, 23% drop out. And graduation rates for youth of color and youth in poverty are significantly lower. And for Native American youth, only four out of 10 actually graduate with a four-year degree. We think of ourselves as a healthy city. However, chronic disease rates have increased, and 43% of Multnomah County residents are overweight or obese. Portland and Multnomah County's total carbon emissions are 2% below 1990 levels. And this is a success, but it's high praise on a very low national standard. We're doing better than the rest of the nation, but by 2030, emissions need to be 40% below the 1990 levels, so we have a long way to go. So in the face of those vulnerabilities and what we want to be as a city, we're proposing the Portland Plan, which you're arguing is a different kind of plan. And in tough times, it's easy to think you can't afford an ambitious plan, but actually it's the exact time to try to act in a smarter fashion. The Portland Plan is a strategic plan. It's a plan that's strategic in the fact that it lays out 25-year goals where we want to get over the long range, but proposes and identifies short-term actions for the next 5 years so we can actually get started acting to make progress towards those goals, because it's going to take that amount of time. It also sets you up with a framework that you can stay focused on over the long term, but allows for you to respond to situations as they change and be nimble and responsive in that way. A major part of why the Portland Plan is a strategic plan is that it proposes a limited set of priorities. You notice that there's a foundation of increasing equity, but there's also three main strategies that we're proposing to focus on. The Portland Plan is a plan for people. It's a different kind of plan in that regard as well. In the past, we might have asked questions, and you've been involved in discussions about where's the best place to provide for transit and to meet traffic needs, to build to meet housing needs. We started this differently by asking the question of what do Portlanders need and what kind of place do the residents and the businesses in Portland want to have to live and work in. And then we asked, how did we get there? For the city to succeed, all Portlanders, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, disability, where they live, their age, their income, or where they were born, must have access to opportunities to advance their well-being and achieve their full potential. This notion of equity and planning for people is also a reason the Portland Plan is different. The Portland Plan is different in that it's counting on partnerships to be the drivers of change. The way the goals of the Portland Plan will be accomplished is not just through city action, not just through public sector action, but through a combination of public and private and civic activities. We built the Portland Plan with our public sector partners engaged at different levels throughout the whole process, with the notion being this. These group of partners here and the state and federal governments annually spend approximately $4 billion on activities related to prosperity, health, and equity within the city, $4 billion. If we can align our expenditures, our focus of where we're spending that money around a shared set of priorities or actions, we believe that we can accomplish what we're trying to accomplish more quickly, more effectively, and in the face of limited resources. The Portland Plan is a different kind of plan because it's a plan that recognizes that one size does not fit all. The city varies geographically across the community, and the priorities we set and where we need to start and what we need to accomplish these sort of citywide strategies needs to vary by the part of town that we're talking about. In the plan itself, we looked at the conditions and sort of the issues facing Portland in a finer grained way by breaking the city up into these 24 local sub areas to really get a better understanding of where different parts of town stand vis-a-vis prosperity, health, equity, where the opportunities are, where the priority actions should be, and how we design a strategy that can be both citywide and target local actions. So we built the plan over the last 2 years by going through the phases that are shown in this diagram. The first phase was about understanding where we are, what are the conditions and trends. In that phase, more than 13,000 youth and adults completed surveys, 2,500 Portlanders attended workshops. We were trying to build a broad-based understanding of the challenges that we face as a city. In the second phase, we set goals for the Portland Plan. And in that phase, about 8,000 Portlanders attended the workshops or participated through surveys, and we developed a set of goals across all of those 9 action areas. In the third phase, we set about defining or building strategies. These were supposed to be multi-objective strategies and also to reflect the priorities that we were hearing about or developed in the first two phases. We did this through a variety of public events as well. And now we have summarized all of the thinking that went into, that came from those first three phases into the draft Portland Plan, and we're getting it out there for public comment and refinement. So today, the first section of the Portland Plan that I want to talk about is the framework for equity. The equity framework sets forth a new way of working that puts achieving equity front and center and identifies some of the specific actions that we need to do to be able to reduce disparities. It starts with a definition of what it is that we mean by equity. The definition is shown on the slide, and it says that equity is when everyone has access to the opportunities necessary to satisfy their essential needs, advance their well-being, and achieve their full potential. We have a shared fate as individuals within a community and communities within society. All communities need the ability to shape their own present and future. Equity is both a means to a healthy community and an end that benefits us all. Based on that definition, we move forward to propose a specific set of actions that form the framework for equity. However, before we move on to that, The question is often asked, why the focus on equity, why now? In the work that we've done in preparing the Portland Plan, we believe that the prosperity that we want to see in our city absolutely depends on reducing disparities and having a more equitable city. We cannot achieve that overall prosperity if groups are left behind. A second reason why benefit of the focus on equity is that we need to be a city that can adapt to change. Part of what the challenges were that we've already talked to that the city faces requires a city that's able to be nimble, to change, to adjust to the future. A city that's more equitable, a society that's more equitable, is more resilient in that way. Greater equity helps us prevent problems, more costly problems that could arise later. By acting proactively in addressing equity, we think that we better assure our ability to be the Portland that we're seeking. The framework for equity specifically includes these groups of activities. The first two deal with how to do how public actions, specifically the decisions that we make and the services that we provide, can be done in a way that reduce disparities and puts out front and center that we need to consider that in making decisions about public decisions and public services. The third item about engaging the community really speaks to inclusion and the emphasis that having these groups that might typically not participate in our decision-making process, and just actually just having greater inclusion in our decision-making period leads to better decision and is an important part of accomplishing equity. The equity framework proposes to launch a racial and ethnic justice initiative focusing on these particular types of disparities, the racial and ethnic disparities, which have been longstanding and persistent, and the belief is being able to make progress on those is essential for us to be able to make progress across the whole set of communities that we that are affected by inequities. The equity framework includes measurements of how we're doing and vis-a-vis equity so that we can monitor our progress, so that we can better understand the places where we need to act. And then in addition to these items shown in the slide, the equity framework pushed us to include specific actions in the following strategies that are targeted on reducing disparities. So the next element of the Portland Plan I'd like to talk about are the three integrated strategies. As I said, these three strategies are thriving and educated youth, economic prosperity and affordability, and healthy connected city. When you look at the plan, in each strategy, you're going to see a number of items. First is that each strategy defines a goal and specific measurable objectives of what it is that we want to accomplish through those the group of activities that are the strategy. Secondly, it spells out some guiding policies, which are 25-year sort of statements of what we will do over the next 25 years in general terms to accomplish these goals and objectives. It also includes 5-year action plans, which is where we're going to start with action and which of our partners are going to step up to take the lead or help complete an action. So the first of the strategies address thriving and educated youth. The goal for the strategy is stated here in a nutshell. It's that it's focused, this strategy is focused on the success of youth in Portland, starting with preschool age children and following and trying to see that they're, the steps towards a successful life are met through the elementary and high school years, through leaving the high school education, starting a career, getting a job. So what helps youth thrive? What are the elements of this particular strategy? First, the notion of setting a culture of high expectations and achievement for all really is saying that achieving educational outcomes, we're going to focus on seeing improvements in the educational outcomes that our residents need to reach self-sufficiency by the age of 25. The notion of having shared ownership of youth success is really a set of elements in the strategy that are endorsing support for the Cradle to Career Initiative, which is a countywide public and private collaboration that's attempting to align and share responsibilities across both not just the our educational institutions, but with the private sector and other public sector entities to share responsibility for the success of youth. The notion of supportive neighborhoods and communities is really asking the question of what can the quality of our neighborhoods provide to support better outcomes for the education of youth. And finally, the notion of facilities and programs to meet the 21st century opportunities and challenges is looking at the specific issues related to the need of having up-to-date facilities in the face of financial constraints that we have now through shared funding, through shared use, and through other strategies. The second strategy is about economic prosperity and affordability. And the goal is stated here for the whole strategy. And really, it has two sort of main elements. It's focused on actions that support business growth and success of businesses, and a sets of actions that are focused on household economic success, household prosperity, the prosperity of the residents of the city of Portland that we hope are going to be the beneficiaries of the business growth and the jobs that that can create. The first set of actions in terms of business prosperity includes the elements shown on this slide. The first two really speak to and incorporate the heart of the city's economic development strategy, which is a focus on traded sector industries, those industries where businesses in Portland are selling to the rest of the world. Secondly, maintaining or growing the leadership and sort of a competitive advantage that we believe that we're seeing in Portland industries around green technology and sustainability. The third element, not shown in the slide, but it's also a neighborhood economic development strategy looking at growing small businesses in neighborhoods across the city. The second group of activities are focused on more traditional sort of building blocks of economic prosperity, of making sure that we have the transportation system in place to continue to support the trade gateway and export industries that have long been one of the economic bases of Portland. And also to make sure that we have land and sort of commercial space adequate to meet the growth potential that the city is going to need to be able to meet the job demands and job needs of the future. The final element of this part of the strategy is focusing on workforce training and to improve the strategic alignment and the effectiveness of our workforce training systems to get people into prepared for and into the jobs in these growing sectors and the traded sector jobs. On the flip side, the other side, looking at household prosperity, there's a number of elements. This is the section of the strategy that really focuses on actions that can help meet the housing needs of a growing population. So it's the type of units that are provided, the type of housing that's provided, at what kind of affordability levels and where. It also calls for looking at redefining how we understand what makes affordable housing or the affordability of our city, really, where it's not just the cost of housing, it's also the cost of transportation, it's the cost of education, it's the cost of the other sort of bundle of things that a household needs to survive, to make its ends meet, and having neighborhoods support affordable versions of meeting those needs. And then finally, this part of the strategy includes other sort of services that, if they are not present, create roadblocks to households finding employment and succeeding in having successful jobs or careers. The final strategy is Healthy and Connected City. The goal for this strategy is shown here, and this, at its heart, it's about how our neighborhoods are designed and will grow to meet the household needs of Portland residents and do so in a sustainable way. This is a strategy that touches, again, on housing and the needs of commerce of our neighborhood businesses. It touches on the need of environmental quality. It touches on the need for transportation and connections. And at its heart, this is the strategy that's asking the question of how do we shape the growth and development of our neighborhoods to have a positive impact on the health of the people of Portland. So when you think about that, the built environment has to offer in terms of supporting healthy lifestyles. You can just look at your own neighborhood and look at the parts of the city and you can see clearly that in many, many different ways, how our neighborhood's designed, how it grows, what it has to offer in our neighborhoods is important and supportive of the health of people as well as the economic success of our neighborhoods. The definition of what a healthy neighborhood means is not just to pretend that those neighborhoods exist in isolation from each other. Actually, the connections between those neighborhoods and the rest of the city is an important part of the strategy. And the Healthy Connected City strategy identifies three main types of connections that it proposes that we define a priority system of connections and set as a priority to build over the next 25 years. Those types of connections are a set of connections that are focused on habitat, which is the notion of strengthening, expanding, and bringing habitat connections from our habitat areas, which tend to be around the edge of the city, more into the neighborhoods and to take advantage of a greater connectivity there. It defines a notion of a neighborhood greenway, which is really a set of green streets and trails that are safe and comfortable to walk or bike or get around to the destinations that we need to in our neighborhoods without necessarily having to get in a car to do that. A set of those kind of greenways connecting our commercial areas and our parks and our schools and major destinations that are important for neighborhood life. And the final set of these connections is what we're calling civic corridors. And this is a street like Sandy or 122nd or 82nd, our major transit streets, our major corridors, and putting out there a set of expectations for them to be a more attractive and safe environments, and also environments that we think, if designed well, can accommodate a lot of the growth that the city needs expects to see over the next 25 years. So when you put all those pieces together, you get a network that looks something like this. This is just an illustration, but that you have a set of these hubs, these kind of neighborhood commercial and service centers, serving those 24 sort of sub areas that we showed in the earlier slide, connected by this priority network of different types of connections so that each of the parts of the city is successful and vibrant, and the city, each of those parts is connected to the rest of the city and to the region. Finally, the last element of the Portland Plan are the 12 measures of success. And we've identified these 12 track our performance on the different parts of the Portland Plan strategy as it's implemented. When you look into the strategy, you're going to see that for each of these, there's an explanation of why it's important. There's an explanation of where we are now and where we expect to, where we think we need to be based on the goals that's set in the Portland Plan. And it also includes a comparison against other cities to be able to benchmark ourselves against the best practices that are out there in the rest of the nation or the world. In the Portland Plan, you're also going to see where we took the extra step to break down indicators and start to develop a set of indicators for our more local areas, for the neighborhoods. And these we did to be able to provide information to show how we need to tailor the Portland Plan to respond to the different needs of different parts of town, and to give actually our partners in doing this information about where to start and what the priorities, what the most critical issues could be. So how will we implement the Portland Plan? We've already talked about partnerships, and that's actually a very critical part and purpose of the Portland Plan, but also, the Portland Plan is implemented through actions, and that we show the commitment to those actions through building them into our annual budget cycle to ask the question when we prepare these budgets of what are we doing to in our different bureaus and expenditures that align with the priorities that are spelled out in the Portland Plan. We have a five-year citywide and local actions that are shown in the Portland Plan as well. There are specific initiatives that over the next 5 years we would like to at least start. Part of the Portland Plan, a good deal of it, especially in the longer range policies, gets implemented by being incorporated into a new comprehensive plan, which is the city's main tool for guiding long-range development of the city. It's implemented through the monitoring system and the measures of success that we will update on a regular basis to see how we're doing. So moving forward, Portland Plan is in the hearing process right now, and we're looking forward to getting feedback from the public, from our partners, to refine and improve the plan as we take it through the review process here. We're going to be working closely with our partner agencies to get specific about, even in the coming budget year, what might we be able to do to start moving on Portland Plan activities even while the Portland Plan is under review. We're starting activities that already begin our focus on equity, with the approval recently of the creation of the Office of Equity and Human Rights being a first step in that. And with that, that concludes our presentation, and we look forward to the comments tonight.
Thank you, Joe. With that, we're going to get started on taking testimony. Reminder, If you've not filled out a card, please do. The testimony tonight, time frame is 3 minutes. If you have written testimony, you can give it to Julie, and she will ensure that all of us get a copy of your testimony. And we look forward to your testimony. We may not ask questions during your testimony because we're trying to get through everybody, but and we may go for more water or cookies that Karen has provided, so, but we are listening. And with that, we're gonna get started with the first two. Don Grotting and Annette Mattson.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Don Grotting, David Douglas School District Superintendent. On behalf of the school districts in East Portland, we want to thank you for this opportunity to share our feedback for the Portland plan. We feel the draft plan is comprehensive and realistic. The five-year action plan is appropriate with these additional thoughts. When considering the overall urban growth plan, it is critical that zoning for high-density housing and federally assisted low-income housing be proportionately distributed across all school districts. Policies that target East Portland neighborhoods or provide incentives to build more low-income housing there are unacceptable and unsustainable for our districts. The high proportion of low-income housing in East Portland is burdening the district's capacity to provide services required of students of poverty. When allocating resources, Portland should prioritize allocations to those school districts and neighborhoods with the greatest needs. Portland's actions should adhere to the principles of equity embedded in the Portland plan. Also, the Cradle to Career Initiative is promising in helping to eliminate educational disparities among children and youth through meaningful collaborations with K-12 public education, and all of us urge support for this effort. It is imperative to continue the work with All Hands Raised Foundation. Sun Community Schools are already delivering on the promise to support children and families. We value the Portland plan's written commitment to expand these services, expanding the Sun Community Schools program to more schools in East Portland where the need is highest, is key for making this plan a success. The Portland plan should also become the guiding vision for all we do. Once adopted, progress should be carefully monitored and the plan adjusted to assure success. We would also like to offer some suggestions for the format and language of the draft of the Portland plan. And if you'll notice in the written testimony, there are some format recommendations. I'm not gonna go into that due to time constraints. Also regarding enrollment projections, the Centennial School District does not have enough land set aside for new schools to accommodate its projected growth capacity. Enrollment projections for East Portland districts point to a need for long-range facility planning, including land set-asides. This issue should be addressed in the comprehensive plan, and our districts are looking forward to participating in those discussions. The Reynolds School District crosses five municipalities. Some students live in Portland and attend in Troutdale. Their numbers should also be accurately represented. East Portland schools have high mobility rates. The districts need additional jobs, transit infrastructure, and services to keep students in their places longer. And finally, regarding English language learners, the number of students receiving ELL services, as shown in recent representations, do not accurately represent the full number of English language students in our districts. These numbers only show students receiving services and do not include others, those who are identified as ELL students but refuse services, or those previously identified and now are being monitored. ELL students not receiving services still place a very high demand on our teachers, staff, and the system. Also enclosed in our written testimony are those accurate data figures. Once again, we appreciate your consideration of our feedback and look forward to your partnership in making a brighter future for all Portlanders. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Annette Mattson. I'm a 30-year resident of East Portland and serve on MPAC, the 122nd Avenue Project, Commissioner Fish and Chair Kogan's Big Look Committee, the David Douglas School Board, and other groups. I have some brief thoughts to share tonight. I will submit additional comments in writing, as will the David Douglas School Board. The Portland Plan focus on equity is right and moral. Do not let these words be part of a plan that sits on a shelf or that delivers improvements of quality of life only for the haves of this city. Policy, practice, and zoning over the last 20 plus years have resulted in the creation of a city that is increasingly racially and socioeconomically segregated. City spending has seldom been targeted to the communities of greatest need. The result of current policy has been the creation of high-poverty neighborhoods, high-poverty schools, high-poverty school districts, and a disproportionate loss of property value in some areas. Citywide, we've lost good-paying jobs. City investments and infrastructure have not followed the areas with the greatest population growth. Some more specific comments on the plan. Regarding thriving educated youth in the 2035 objectives, page 23, please add a statement regarding equitable support for all of the city's school districts. Pages 28 and 29, for neighborhoods and communities that support youth, these are very well-stated goals, and I support the five-year action plan. Pages 30, 31, for facilities and programs. More education programs and facilities, such as the EPAP proposal for a Gateway Education Center, are critical. Related to both of these goals, increased access to community centers is needed. Portland east of 82nd has 28% of the city's population, but only 2 of the 16 community centers. Regarding economic prosperity and affordability on page 35, equitable distribution of affordable housing throughout the city's neighborhoods needs to be specified. Also, located and growing more businesses and family wage jobs in the neighborhoods that have the highest poverty ratings will increase the prosperity of residents, decrease dependency on social services, raise the tax base, reduce transportation costs for residents, and increase walking and biking as travel modes in these areas. Zoning changes may be needed to support this. Page 49 touches on some of these matters, but it is extremely important to follow these steps for bringing prosperity to all of the city's residents. Regarding connections to people, places, water, and wildlife, page 71, item 25, think freeway lands. Lastly, I think there should be an additional mention of the diversity of the city's children. While the people in power in Portland are mostly white and middle class, most of our kids are not. And today's children are the ones this plan really needs to serve. Thank you.
Yes, oh, hold on, I think we have a couple questions.
I hope you're going to provide us with written copies of your remarks, because I didn't get all those page numbers, but they were good thoughts. You've talked about underinvestment in neighborhoods with growing population. I think we can generalize that to East Portland. I'm curious if you're familiar with the East Portland in Motion plan, because that struck me as a very good example of how to start addressing some of those, and I wonder if you have any thoughts on that. Is that, in fact, the kind of roadmap we should be following?
I am aware of it at a very high level. Unfortunately, Commissioner, I don't have time to read everything that comes out in public documents, but yes, that is definitely on the right track.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll call up three at a time now. Max Dimming, Jason Barnstead Long, and Terry Parker. Max, you want to get started?
Hello, my name is Max Denning. I'm a sophomore at Parkhurst High School, and I'm I was recently elected as the Metro Representative of the Oregon Association of Student Councils on the Oregon Association of Student Councils Student Executive Council. As a leader in the youth community, I realize the lack of youth involvement in political and community decisions and actions. I've come here today to testify to how the Portland Plan can insert youth into their priorities. You write in your Portland Plan that youth make up 25% of Multnomah County's population, and engaging this 25%, I understand, can be difficult. But the Portland Plan, but promoting the evolution of youth from being passive actors in this community to engaged leaders throughout their lives can be one of the most effective ways to make your plan more efficient and passionate. Youth, like myself, are the future, and empowering them to have a voice in decisions like these will make it more likely that your plans take effect. I would love to see in Portland a more effective and active Youth Advisory Council. To set this up, we would need more promotion in Portland high schools and more diverse promotion from the western high schools in Portland to the eastern side, like myself. The best way to get youth involved is by giving them chances to do so. A youth advisory council could attend meetings like these and put in their input into your extensive plan. A youth advisory council would be a great way to add diverse and fresh ideas to your plan. Here at Park Rose High School, our superintendent, Dr. Karen Gray, has a monthly meeting with leaders from each grade level in our high school, asking them for their thoughts and ideas on what can be improved in the school district. Meetings as simple as that further advocate that young people see themselves as a valuable member of society. At this time, I would like to introduce the Free Child Project. The Free Child Project is an organization in Olympia, Washington, that's mission is to advocate social change led by and with young people around the world. The Free Child Project's website, freechild.org, has an immense amount of new roles for young people and how you can enter these roles into your community. They have ideas on their websites on how to implement youth as activists, as community planners, and as librarians. The Free Child Project also facilitates training and workshops for organizations on how to involve the youth. I encourage the Portland Plan to enter the Free Child Project and to look into it and see how its ideas could be implemented into our communities. Youth is the future of this community, and the more we get involved and are passionate about what we're involved in, the brighter our future is. Thank you. Mike. The Free Child Project. Freechildproject.org. Where is it? Freechild.org.
Jason.
Good evening, commissioners. I wanted to elaborate on something I briefly mentioned in my email to your committee and the city staff on October 28th. In the email, I noted that in my first readings of the report and the summary, I found very little text on the city's need and desire for as wide a variety as possible of Portlanders to continue and increase their involvement with community affairs and development. As a member of the CIC, and with my participation in many different efforts to reach out to individuals and communities throughout Portland regarding the Portland Plan, I had heard and understood that the development and community building that the actions in these Portland Plan documents were intended to help create was clearly going to need continued and increased involvement from as many different individuals and groups and communities in Portland as possible. Because of that, I was surprised by the lack of text promoting or at least acknowledging that concept in the documents. While the city and its Portland Plan partners were mentioned and referred to a number of times in both the report and the summary, as ambassadors to accomplishing the goals of the plan, mention of people's, residents, and self-identified communities' involvement was almost completely restricted to the short A Framework for Equity section in the report that was even shorter in the summary. This could easily make many readers feel that their ideas were unappreciated. The ability for people to voice their issues and needs is an important and valued quality here in Portland, and that the city will listen and work with them just as much so. With that, I ask that at least all of the A Framework for Equity section be included in the summary, and if it is not possible to also include individual involvement more evenly throughout the documents, that it is promoted in related efforts, documents, and conversations. While talking about it and promoting it during the process of creating the Portland Plan was good and needed, it still needs to be shown to a convincing degree in these documents that successful development will require and grow from much more of Portland's different communities' involvement. Thank you.
Terry?
Thank you. My name is Terry Parker. I'm a fourth generation Portlander and currently a member of the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association and Board and the Neighborhood's Land Use and Transportation Committee. For this evening, I am speaking as an individual focusing primarily on the transportation tactics proposed in the Portland Plan. A healthy, connected city requires a financially healthy environment. Sustainability starts with financial self-sustainability. What is missing from the entire Portland Plan is the price tag. Approving this plan as it now stands is like promoting a roadmap with no financially self-sustainable means to build the roads. For example, on page 79, to pay for the numbers 35 and 36 of the five-year action plan relating to greenways and transportation policy, financial equity requires that user fees be aligned with the priorities for the planning and investments identified, whereby the users of bicycle and transit infrastructure are the primary payees. But instead, costly taxpayer-funded incentives are being proposed that will likely be one-sided and unjustly socially engineered. Today's average transit passenger is receiving a taxpayer-funded subsidy of over $6 in operational cost per each one-way trip, which does not include the cost of rail vehicles, the tracks they run on, shelters, buses, the damaged heavy buses due to the roads, etc. Bicycles have yet to be charged user fees. Motorists paid fuel taxes, the current primary source of revenue for transportation infrastructure, are absent when cars are parked. Additionally, 10% of the jobs in the U.S. are directly tied to the auto industry. The results of adopting the targets of driving less in the Portland Plan will undoubtedly create a significant reduction of family wage private sector jobs coupled with a likely increase in public sector jobs, thereby increasing both public debt and the overall cost of living within the city. The unsustainable concept will also generate significantly less revenue to maintain roads. On page 75, number 35, in the five-year plan, the proposal is to begin concept planning for two corridors in the streetcar system concept plan. Instead, a replacement action item is needed that reflects the overburdening cost to the public of constructing streetcar system, the detrimental environmental effects of digging up the streets to add rails, and the potential congestion of slow-moving streetcars when operating on city streets. The more cost-effective replacement action also needs to include a recommendation for electric trolley buses that can operate on existing high transit volume streets and corridors. The minimal requirements for such a modern electric trolley bus system are the overhead wires and related electrical gear, which can be installed for about a third of the cost per mile as compared to a streetcar system, thereby getting more efficient mileage per dollar invested. Although the promotion of the Portland Plan is that it offers more transport choices to the public, the underlying fact is the plan theoretically is designed to reduce choices and exercise more control over the working class who already pay a greater share of their earned income in taxes. Likewise, any attempt to increase the cost of driving will result in a further separation of the middle working class from the upper class and the wealthy. The plan is as much a social engineering document as it is a planning document. The social engineering parts need to be surgically removed. In closing, the following quote was made by Margaret Thatcher: "Socialism fails when you run out of other people's money." The federal government is deep in debt with a supercommittee attempting to address a debt reduction plan. Government at all levels, the school districts and TriMet are all having to cut budgets. Do you see the connection to her quote? In this country, we have a democracy. That includes freedom of choice. Do you now see why parts of this plan are, as is, are in the wrong direction? Thank you.
Thank you. Howard?
Yes, sir. You're $6 operational cost for a one-way trip. Can you footnote that for us?
Yes, sir. A trip is about $2 or $2.10, zone one. That covers 25% of the operating cost. That figure actually came from the city of Portland. So if you're putting $2 in the fare box, that means that you're being subsidized another $6 through the payroll tax or other means.
Other questions? Thank you. Next three, David Hampstein, Darcy Walker, and Jeremy O'Leary.
David, you want to get started? Good evening, commissioners. My name is David Hampston. I'm on the Hazelwood Neighborhood Board. Hazelwood is around the Gateway and Glendevere Golf Course area. I'm also on the Transportation Budget Advisory Committee for PBOT. I applaud the Portland Plan equity items. I think that'll really help on the long term for areas such as East Portland or North Portland that traditionally have not gotten enough investment from the city, especially since we've been in the city now between 20 and 25 years since annexation. And we've gotten most of the services that we have as far as transportation is what was supplied to us by the county before annexation. However, I have to agree with Terry Parker. Your budget related to the Portland plan as far as transportation improvements and a lot of the greenways and creating 20-minute walkable communities, it's unsustainable. PBOT cannot fund it. They're already looking at a shrinking budget because, quite frankly, PBOT has been way too successful on getting people out of their cars, onto bicycles, using transit. They've been so successful that they have a shrinking budget. People are not registering their vehicles, and they're not driving as much, and so we're getting less and less in gas tax in this area. And unfortunately, inflation is eating what little we do get. So I think you need to go back to your plan, figure out how you're going to actually fund these improvements over the next 25 years. Obviously, you'll be using some taxes based on property, probably some payroll taxes. You know you can't get sales tax in Oregon. So I think you really need to go back and figure out what you can or cannot pay for. I think the goals that you have in the Portland plan are certainly good, but I think they're a bit lofty. And I think some of the infrastructure improvements that you're trying to provide or think you should be providing, you need to figure out long-term how you're gonna pay for them. And I know at PBOT, among the non-PBOT employees who are on the budget committee, we have in the past discussed looking at utility fees, that sort of thing. But I think there needs to be a much wider community discussion on how you're gonna pay for improvements, especially putting in trees in areas that don't have trees, how you're gonna clean up the leaves from those trees, how you're gonna provide sidewalks, not only on arterials, but also even in local streets. And then paving the 59 miles of gravel streets throughout Portland. So thank you very much for taking the effort on this, but I think you need to go a little bit further. Thank you.
Thank you. Darcy?
Hi, my name is Darice Weller. I'm on the Linton Neighborhood Association Board. I'm a member of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group for the Superfund site. I'm a board member of the Northwest Toxics Coalition, Communities Coalition for Region 10. Today I speak for myself, though. Where's emergency planning in this document? Of the 12 measures of success, the only item referenced to under a safer city is crime rate. As I'm sure you're well aware of, we are overdue for an 8 or 9 earthquake. As Yume Wang of Dogami puts it, the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake is like a 9-month pregnant woman. She's due any day now. The difference between Haiti and Chile after each recently experienced large earthquakes was that Chile was more prepared and therefore much less devastated than Haiti, which is still in turmoil due to their earthquake. Action items included in this plan should be that our bridges, our schools, our infrastructure should be updated and appropriate seismic and environmental catastrophes. Tank farms in Linton Willbridge will need to be moved. The reason being multifold, air toxics being one of them, and these tanks are located on liquefaction areas and multiple fault lines next to the river's edge. In the event of an earthquake, they will collapse, dumps millions of gallons of fuel and other chemicals into a tidal river, ignite, set the river, Linton, Forest Hills Park, and most likely St. John's and the rest of the tanks on fire. Not only will there be a devastation of epic proportions caused by the tank farms, but since 90% of our fuel for the entire region is located in the Linton-Wilbridge area, we will also be without critical fuel needed for rescue and rebuilding, with none coming anytime soon after a major earthquake. And then there's the liquid hydrogen located at Siltronics and the LNG at Gasco, which the tank farm fires would likely affect, that is, if they don't create their own explosive problems, both in each other's footprint of a one-mile blast area. The St. John's Bridge is also located in that one-mile footprint. Unless we do what we can, plan, and prepare for the impending earthquake, we will be devastated like Haiti. So you can see the necessity for long-term emergency planning for the safety of our city. And I will be giving you written testimony with further details and more information by the 30th. To better understand the magnitude of the earthquake problem, I might suggest you attend a lecture by either James Roddy or Yume Wang of Dogami. Yume has a talk coming up on December 9th at 9 a.m. at the Fire and Rescue Training Center located close by at 4800 Northeast 122nd. And as my former teacher self, I can't help resist but giving you yet another homework assignment to help with you in preparing for this plan document on environmental issues that both Jan Secunda and I will be touching on later in writing. That assignment would be to watch the documentary narrated by Leo DiCaprio, The 11th Hour. It's available at the Multnomah County Library. And after watching this movie, you can understand why everyone should want to love Portland if this plan is properly written with the environment taken into consideration. Thank you.
My name is Jeremy O'Leary, and I swear I did not coordinate with the presenters because they basically told about 90% of what I was going to say, so I will elaborate further. Based on my experience with the Peak Oil Task Force, Climate Action Plan, Multnomah Food Initiative, and as a recent trainer for the community emergency response teams, there is a significant part of the equity conversations is not being covered, like how our society functions after a subduction zone earthquake. I would strongly encourage you to check out the Portland LEAP project, the Local Energy Assurance Program. It's a joint effort of U.S. Department of Energy and Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. So particularly like on page 76 of your document where they, I was rather disappointed to see that it's basically bailed on the 20-minute neighborhood for basically all of East Portland, where I've been a resident for the last 10 years. Particularly areas that are not close to the neighborhood hubs, if you just pick some of the schools, seismically upgrade them, and basically have them be the community centers at night after the children are no longer there. You could also use those facilities to, if you put solar PV panels on the roofs, rainwater catchment, and use those food certified kitchens, at a minimum, you could start creating islands of where you know there's gonna be at least minimal power supplies, water, and you'd be able to, so when we have a subduction zone earthquake, that we have a bit more of a chance to recover. There's also a pretty significant issue with as 90% of the gasoline and diesel that we use in the Portland area come from four refineries up there around the Puget Sound, if we have a full fault line rip for subduction and earthquake, those refineries can be knocked offline. And as there's not a drop of oil extracted out of the ground or refined in the state of Oregon, pretty much all of our liquid fuel supplies are going to be coming from east of us, and that's assuming that I-5 isn't severely damaged in the I-84 is sufficiently damaged in the process. Not to spend too much time on trying to scare people, one thing that another request is that if you can encourage, particularly in the more food deserty areas in East Portland, one thing you could do to encourage is to encourage buying clubs, where basically people are able to band together and buy food in bulk, where they're able to reduce the cost, get better quality food, and also start building a bit of a buffer so when we get knocked offline for a period of time, that they're able to have their own community resiliency in place. And it's also food they can actually eat. Because I know the Red Cross is rather concerned if they had to stand up for a subduction earthquake, there's vast sections of East Portland that would not be covered. So, and I'm out of time.
Thank you. Quick question from Mike.
I have a question. Actually, a follow-up. I mean, basically what I'm hearing you folks, Larry, is that right? And Darcy?
Jeremy.
Is highlighting the need to pay as much attention to climate adaptation, that is the potential negative impact of climate change as much as we talk about mitigation and reducing VMT or whatever. So I would personally appreciate as many specifics as you can looking at both the Climate Action Plan and the Portland Plan and trying to bring those together. So the more feedback you can give us and being specific would be helpful.
I will be submitting written testimony, just so you have it ready.
Thank you.
I would point out that Michelle Rudd is on the LEAP, is that right?
I attended the tabletop exercise that the LEAP program had last week and found that there were a lot of great connections between what's in the Portland plan and what we need to do to create these resilient communities. So we need to make that connection clearer and the foundation's there. So we just need to tighten it up. And there's a lot of discussion of partnership in the LEAP process that's consistent with what we're hoping to do with the Portland plan as well.
Okay. Mike?
Follow-up, you might also consider becoming engaged in Metro's climate action plan, because at the moment they are definitely focusing more on mitigation and less on adaptation, the sorts of issues you raised, and it's a great opportunity. They are one of our partners, and this, obviously, climate change is a regional issue, not just for the city of Portland. So I just encourage you to be engaged in that process as well.
Cool, thank you.
Thank you. We're gonna invite four up this time, Bridget Lang, Marnus Ibiki, Anna Meza, and Sumatra. I don't know if I got that last name right. Bridget, you want to start?
Can you hear me? Okay. It's very nice to see everyone again. My name is Bridget Lang. I'm a sophomore at Jefferson, and I'm a resident of North Portland. I'm also a co-chair of the Health and Wellness Committee of the Multnomah Youth Commission. On the commission, we have 8 youth that represent Park Rose and David Douglas High Schools, but as a total, we represent 18 schools in Multnomah County. As a representative of the NYC, I'm here to provide a voice for the youth that will be affected by the Portland Plan. We of the NYC have worked very closely with the Youth Planning Program to ensure that we give a detailed and relevant testimony. We would again like to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for our ability to work with the youth planners and staff to support our involvement and participation in the implementation of the Portland Plan over the next 25 years. In the Thriving Educated Youth Strategy, there are several objectives we feel need significant revision for them to reflect the needs of the youth of Portland and Multnomah County. We want to take a look at Objective 1, Supportive Neighborhoods. At-risk youth live in safe neighborhoods with comprehensive, coordinated support systems inside and outside of the classroom, including mentors, opportunities for physical activity, and healthy eating, workforce training, and employment opportunities. As a resident of North Portland and a student at Jefferson, I have been able to get a firsthand look at the disparities in resources between neighborhoods in Portland. For example, many of my friends live in poor neighborhoods with minimal transportation, parks, stores, and community centers because neighborhoods that have excess public transportation like MAX lines and buses are extremely expensive to live in. This leaves those outside of these neighborhoods with few resources to be active citizens and healthy people in general. As a result, youth in disadvantaged neighborhoods don't have a way to get outside of their neighborhood to new stores and playgrounds with sidewalks, and they are forced to be in their homes or out on the streets to entertain themselves. We need to close the gap between youth in neighborhoods who experience violence, lack of housing stability, rising housing costs, poor transportation, no parks or even community spaces that are interesting and stimulating to youth, especially when it rains almost the whole year. The objective as written does not name these specific things which we believe the city needs to address in order to create the supportive neighborhoods that the Portland Plan envisions. We do appreciate that it includes mentors, physical activity, healthy eating, and employment, although we do not think these are the only ways to create supportive neighborhoods. We ask that you continue to welcome youth to the table to help the Portland Plan think through what specific things the city and partners can do to improve our lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to give me the opportunity to comment about the Portland Plan. My name is Maria Sivue, and I am a youth planner. I live in Northeast Portland, and I am in first year at Portland Community College, and also a recipient of the Future Connect Scholarship. As a youth planner, I take seriously my role to amplify the voice of the over 121,000 youth of Portland. I am here tonight to tell you what we think is missing from the Portland Plan. I am very proud to be a youth planner, and I want to thank the BPS for this opportunity to make such a big impact in my role as an official city employee. Without programs like the YPP and MIC, the voices of youth may not ever be heard, especially in plan that has to do with our future. Thank you again for including thriving educated youth section into the plan. Please remember that in order for it to be implemented successfully, youth have to be at the table directly to influence the process. I am here to talk about another missing piece. In objective two, graduation rate, it says, the on-time high school graduation rate for all Portland youth is 95 to 100%. From a youth view, this is not the full picture of our lives and our success as a contributing resident. Youth are unique people with many different life situations when we get to school every morning. We are far more diverse ethnically and racially across 5 of our 6 school districts than current adult population. We represent the future of this city, and we can tell you today how we can address our unique needs from our unique background. Schools still operate as one size fits all. We are expected to perform the same way despite our differences and access to resources. These objectives named graduation rate as the most important indicator of youth success. The plan assumes that all youth will be able to reach the goal of 95 to 100% graduation with 4 years of high school. I would love for our graduation rate to be up there, but is it possible? I don't agree with that. We think there are other indicators to consider, like readiness of life after high school. We need to ask what are the reasons behind why people are not graduating. Youth of color, low-income youth, New Portlanders, youth learning English, youth who are parents, youth who are queer, or disabled youth are challenged to succeed, mainly because the system does not adapt to their experiences. We need to include these factors as a way to We need to include these factors as the way to measure youth success in education. For example, when I first came to the United States at David Douglas as a junior, I was told that I had to wait until I'm 21 to graduate from high school because I didn't have the required credits. I decided to figure out what I could do to help myself out of that situation. I made lots of visit to my counselor and ask them if my transcript from my country would help. I had my brother who was on his way to the US to carry my transcripts with him. When I presented it to my school, they were able to apply credit toward graduation, which was really helpful to me. It was important for me to graduate on time so that I can move on to college and feel like I can reach my goal of becoming a pharmacist. If other immigrant youth had the opportunity to apply the transcript from the previous school, perhaps this could help increase graduation rate for immigrant youth. Because the school did not consider my unique situation as a refugee, I had to advocate for myself. No one, nor even my counselors, understood what the solution could be. Many students don't feel they are prepared for life, jobs, and the responsibility of family, even if they do get that diploma. Being prepared and confident to enter your life after high school is more necessary than just graduating from high school. To get thriving, educated youth, the Portland Plan must consider these other factors along with graduation rate. I think, in my opinion, in objective two, we should also consider our diverse experiences and other measures to understand our success. Youth need to be involved from the beginning of the conversation, speaking for ourselves about what works for us in and out schools. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Anna Mesa. I'm a senior at David Douglas High School. I'm very proud to be the co-chair for the Health and Wellness Committee for the Multnomah Youth Commission. We work to ensure that youth voices and experiences of our health can impact policies and programs in both the government and the community that affect our life the most. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak on behalf of diverse youth perspectives in Portland. Tonight, I will speak about our specific recommendations to improve the health and wellness youth in Portland. In Objective 6, Health and Wellness, youth of all ages have access to affordable, healthy food at home and in school, and have multiple opportunities for daily physical activity. We feel that healthy food and physical activity are just one aspect of our health. In our schools, at least mine, we are required to take only 1.5 credits, the equivalent of 1 year and one semester of PE. And to be honest, that's usually the only physical activity we get. We feel like we need more places to go within our neighborhoods that have high school age youth in mind. This should be a place which encourages us to get out of the house and get moving, whether it's parks, libraries, community centers, or other public spaces. These places need to be attractive to us and lure us in, but also provide a safe environment in which we can be social, meet other youth, and find ways to be part of and get involved in our community. We feel that to successfully accomplish the Thriving Educated Youth Strategy, youth need to have well-rounded health. Health is really the first step to allow a person to become educated. We believe it is vitally important for overall wellness to include physical, emotional, sexual, and spiritual health. How can we expect to be healthy if we forget about the other types of health that make up who we are as a person? For example, we found disparities in sexual education within the same school. I had 2 months of really well-rounded sexual education in which the teacher was truly interested and engaged and always took the time to answer all of her questions, while a friend of mine only had 2 weeks of sexual education that were full of PowerPoints and really boring lessons. How can we be healthy when there are so many inconsistencies in the understanding of our own bodies? We have the right to choice and voice in our bodies, which means we are at the table in an ongoing way to determine what happens in our health and in our bodies. To make it clear, we would like Objective 6 to state, health and wellness. It is essential youth of all ages have their physical, emotional, sexual, and spiritual health needs met in order to be thriving, educated youth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sumitra. I'm a high school senior at David Douglas High School, and also I have been working at the youth planning program for last two years. Thank you again to BPS and City of Portland's commitment to include youth in our city. Programs like YPP and MYC really made it possible for youth like myself to gain an understanding of things that have a big impact on all of the youth of Portland. I have learned how to connect my personal experience to those all the youth from so many different backgrounds. Thank you for this opportunity to tell you more about ways to include youth voice in our city. I would like to talk about on Objective 7, youth voice. There are many aspects of true youth voice are missing in this objective. First, youth are 25% of population in Multnomah County. Many of us may not be students and experience frustration with our education system. Whatever school district they belong to, We need to include all youth perspective in decision making. We need to find out from youth, especially what is working for them, to get them an education that fits for them, the kind of education all youth deserve. Another way that we think youth voice could be improved in our city is through commitment to program like youth planning program under the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. If the city were able to employ more youth at the level similar to youth planners in other bureaus, where we learn about policy making and get input of diverse group of youth and encourage their involvement in decisions that affects their life. For example, youth planners at the both Parks Bureau and Police Bureau could assist in decisions that could lead lasting impact on youth violence in our communities going on now. Youth voice and civic engagement are critical now and are for our future. For youth to get thriving educated, there needs to be commitment from adults to work with us to come up with the solution that can improve our lives. Lastly, we believe that including these things will improve the city's ability to make the Poland Plan a success. We are here today as an example of diverse youth population in Poland, and we are ready to work with adults for our better future. Lastly, the changes we would like to see in the Objective 7 Youth Voice. Youth Voice is only as powerful as the system that supports those perspectives. In Youth Voice objective, the language needs to include the commitment by adults to support youth in decision-making process. Youth or students actively participate in civil decision-making process that affect our lives. We are really excited to come next time at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability office next time, and with new faces and new youth perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. And could I ask each of you to make sure that your written comments get to Julie, that you just presented?
Yes, sir.
So is that possible?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next four, and these are the last of the comment cards, so if there's anybody else that would like to testify, please get your card to Julie. The last four are Mary Walker, Carla Danley, Brian Walker, and Kitty Larsell. Are there any other individuals that wishes to testify today? So you need to write, if you want to testify, you need to put your name on a card so we can call you up after these four. Mary, you want to get started?
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners and other attendees. This is obviously not an easy job to affect. Thank you for your efforts in improving livability. I am the chair of the Parkers Neighborhood Association, but I come here as a neighbor of Parkrose, and we have lived here approximately 12 years. And I do need to go chair the meeting in about 5 minutes, so I'm gonna cruise through this. I wanted to address a few things about livability along Sandy Boulevard. We come to you in good faith as partners and stewards of improving livability in our community and neighborhood that you will see and act upon in a reasonable and responsible manner, changing the zoning along Sandy Boulevard to a solid commercial district, as the current state of affairs is not fit for a healthy or respectable family lifestyle. It is obviously suited to a business district, and we'd like you to look at that in the upcoming Iraq that's possibly gonna be there, and just in general. I also wanna read something else to you, a portion of a letter that I sent. Park Rose is ripe for redevelopment and in great need of a vaccination. We are a phoenix rising. We will reclaim our neighborhood and the passion for it. We are the international gateway to the world. We need the red light turned off and the red carpet rolled out as we graciously host visitors from around the world. We all know about curb appeal. Need I say more? There is so much more potential here. It is a great bang for your buck area. We need the right marketing to reach the right players. Even with the economy, because of our logistics and beauty of the area, we are a great choice to invest in. The Port of Portland should be able to recognize this advantage as well and be encouraged to be team members in this endeavor. The development of this area will only make PDX and the City of Portland all the more enticing as a destination location. I also wanted to address issues. We need to support our community with space of a community center where we can come together as a community. There's a huge void or gap there, as has been addressed by others previous to me. We do have this fine facility here, which is a community center, but it does not serve all the needs that we have here in this community. We need a place where people can come together, a community hub, Wi-Fi, books, art, local music, book, you know, music from and art from the students, food, refreshment, resources, network, growing gardens, co-op, buying clubs, opportunities for youth and education, outreach, whether it's big sister, brother, mentorships. De La Salle is a high school that kids go to school 4 days a week, and then one day a week they're out in to the community working. So they're learning good job skills, and that looks really good on your resume. Space for classes, availability during the day, walkability, supporting cycling, training, education, exercise opportunity. This is a beautiful area. You can see so many mountains. It's just picturesque. We still are out in farmland here. You know, don't lose the opportunity that we have here to really build on. It's really a gem of the city. So, thank you. I need to go chair a meeting. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Carla?
I'm Brian Walker, and in the first place, I want to kind of, people earlier were talking about the emergency and all that stuff and the costs and fuel. In this tragedy that they were talking about, expecting the earthquake, bike paths would be a great emergency transportation route, and bicycles don't run out of gas. So if you're having arguments about the funding and the costs and the safety of all this stuff, I hope you'll keep that in mind. I've seen the dopers carrying doubles with their scrap down to the scrapyard. They got the little, they have the little kid carriers, and they're pulling doubles. So people can do a lot with bicycles in an emergency. And thank you. And small businesses pay taxes. You're encouraging that. She was just talking about the zoning along Sandy Boulevard. I know of one coffee shop that was wanted to be opened on 112th that I think would have been fully self-supporting because of the bicycles that go down and the people that walk, because there are people that walk in this neighborhood. However, it's $30,000 plus just to kind of ask if you can turn that commercial or that residential property into commercial property. You're not going to get any taxes for that because nobody can afford that. There's a landscaping, or somebody wanted to do a landscaping business at the other house down there. They just can't do it. People can't afford, people in this neighborhood don't have the extra $50,000 on top of what it takes to start a business and scrape it together. And having lived on Sandy Boulevard in that house on 112th, I know that it's not family friendly. It should be a business. The other houses along there should be businesses. It's a freeway. There's lots of noise, and having those as businesses would enhance the neighborhood, I think, better than keeping people living there who can't live anywhere else. And now, having lived in that house, I found out about something else that Park Rose has a lot of, and it's what they call homeless children. And I don't know if they've been accounted for or addressed here tonight, but there's a lot of them. And the mom and the kids can get shelter, but the mom, kids, and dads can't get a shelter. And that causes issue. I'm not an expert on this by any means, but when you're thinking about this, I hope you count them. Are they counted for in these kids that they go to school? They're not, I don't believe they're low income, they're just homeless, and they come and go. Now, Christine Charneski worked on Sens Dairy Park when it was nothing but an empty field. She was out there digging in the dirt by herself. I'm dropping her name because of a great deal of gratitude. On a sunny day, if you go by there, you'll see kids playing in the park. This evening, if you go by there, it's dark out, there will probably be older kids sitting on the benches and like that. It made a huge difference in this neighborhood to have that park. A lot of other people participated in it. If you people can do a little piece of what was done with that park, which I'm sure you're going to, you'll make a huge difference in this neighborhood. And a light in that park would be nice, if you can get that going. But that's it. I don't know if I've ran out of time, but thank you. I hope you're very serious about doing what you're doing and not just politicking. I hear that you are trying to do well. And please do consider the zoning thing and looking around and the lights. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Katie Larcel, and this is my neighborhood. I'm the co-chair of the East Portland Action Plan, but I'm really here as a neighbor, and I want to thank you for coming here to Park Rose. It's always a real joy for me to come into this building. I was on the school board for 8 years here at Park Rose, and my two sons went all the way through the entire system, started in kindergarten and graduated as seniors here at the high school. So it's great to be here. I was glad to see comments on the plan. I was glad to see the Gateway Education Center mentioned explicitly in the plan. That's a project dear to many people in East Portland, and it's going to take partnership and political will to get it built. I was glad to see Sun Schools mentioned as an important way to reach youth. I also would like to see a really strong statement on equity around Sun Schools, because they should be distributed by where the need is greatest. There was also a section on supporting family housing stability. And I think that's just a really wonderful thing. That's a sort of a little known fact that students get behind in school because, especially poorer students, because they have to move so often. And there's also action number 41, I would like to support strongly. It talks about displacement, and I think that that's something that a high-level plan like this should be talking about, is how to maintain, how to improve neighborhoods without changing their character drastically. Sort of an anti-gentrification idea. And East Portland is always asking for resources, and we want to improve our neighborhood, but we don't want our neighborhood to change so much that we don't recognize it. And then there's a few things that I would like to ask for on the plan. There's a lot of talk about school districts, but there's never explicitly stated what school districts we're talking about. And I think there needs to be something said about equity in terms of city resources to the school districts. That's a sensitivity that we in East Portland have. We often feel that that our school districts don't get the same attention that Portland Public does. Number two, there's mentioned greenways. I love the greenways. Sometimes, because this plan is so high level, when it does pick out a particular project, it almost seems a little random. And there's a wonderful new study called the East Portland in Motion. And I think that that should be used as the as one of the ways that you, as a very important way to distribute resources around greenways, rather than just sort of picking one or two greenways and then saying that those are the ones that you're going to do next. I have two more things. I'd love to see more around prioritizing capital funding for improving parks in East Portland. I mean, it's been a long time coming, and it hasn't come yet. So I'd love to see it explicitly stated in the plan. And then also, let's see. And also, there's some mention of using zoning changes as a way to change the character of the city. That's something that we've been asking for in East Portland, and I'd like it to be more explicitly stated in the plan. And that's it. Just some feedback on pros and cons on this very important plan.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Carla?
Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to speak before you. My name is Carla Danley. I'm here today as a citizen and not necessarily representing any of the many citizens advisory committees in which I participate. One of our greatest successes as a society is that people are living longer than ever before. Portland joins the rest of the country and the entire industrialized world in becoming an aging community. In the next 20 years, one in four Portlanders will be over age 65. In the Portland plan, we recognize the needs of young people as being so unique that one of the three integrated strategies focuses solely on youth. But what about the needs of older adults? In recent years, PSU's Institute on Aging partnered with the World Health Organization to uncover best practices for age-friendly cities. Virtually none of this work is reflected in the Portland plan. We know the vast majority of people age 50 and over, when asked, state that they prefer to age in place, remaining in their own homes and communities until the end of life, rather than living in institutional settings. Many older adults will eventually require the use of mobility devices and will need housing that allows for maneuverability and ease of movement while using a walker or wheelchair. There is no language in the Portland plan which addresses creating a stock of housing, both public and private, in a variety of neighborhoods which supports people throughout the life cycle. Nor is there any action step recommending adjustments in zoning, building codes, and other policies to encourage the development of age-friendly housing. The five-year action plan for housing addresses affordability and contractor hiring practices, but makes scarce reference to implementing design standards to improve accessibility and makes no reference at all to promoting neighborhood choice by ensuring that accessible housing is available across a distribution of neighborhoods. The Portland plan does mention implementing the Fair Housing Action Plan, but in the region's most recent analysis of impediments to fair housing, Portland's obligation to meet the housing needs of people with impaired mobility is glaring in its absence. The city has a federally mandated obligation to affirmatively further fair housing in both public and private housing markets and to identify policies and practices which have the intentional or unintended effect of restricting housing choice for people with disabilities. Portland has failed in its obligation and failed as well to acknowledge that the obligation exists. The Portland plan offers a groundbreaking opportunity to finally get it right with regards to housing and to address the housing needs of all Portlanders. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. The last two, if there's nobody else, we'll have Sam Chase and Alan Lazo.
Hi, Sam Chase. I'm the executive director for the Coalition of Community Health Clinics, which is a coalition of 14 clinics in the metro area that provide health care to people without insurance, low-income people and families, homeless people. I'm also a candidate for Metro District 5, which includes North, Northeast, part of East Portland. And, you know, I've worked in Portland, you know, on a lot of these issues for the last 20 years. And, you know, this is a great plan. I think it includes a lot of the things that we want to be doing. And frankly, we know what to do. I mean, in many ways, the plan, you know, we know that kids succeed in life when they have a good schools, when they have affordable housing where they can do their homework, and we know they perform better in school, when they have a healthy ability, a built environment where they are able to live a healthy life, places to play outdoors, parks to play outdoors. One of the things that I think is going to be a charge now is to say, you know, if we're serious about equity, how are we going to really make sure that some of the investments that we are making are happening in North, Northeast, East Portland? How are we going to make sure that, because we have a lot of priorities in our city, and many of the, and I support an enormous amount of them. I support the alternative transportation strategies, our downtown urban development strategies. I even like going to the Timbers games. But at the end of the day, how serious are we going to be about investing in these areas and spending our dollars in North, Northeast, East Portland? Because that's where the rubber hits the road. Are we going to really invest and prioritize investing in some of these areas where there are disparities, where there are high levels of poverty? Those are folks often who are out struggling, trying to make ends meet by working two jobs, and they're not at those city council meetings. So I think that's a important area to focus, is really, you know, advocating that those dollars get into to the neighborhoods and into these strategies. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan?
Good evening. My name's Alan Lazo. I'm the chair of the City of Portland's Human Rights Commission. And actually, we will be bringing forth comments from the commission to you in 2 weeks. And so I'm speaking to you tonight as an individual, not as a representative of that body, but we will see you in 2 weeks. I am an individual who identifies as a person with a disability. And I wanted to bring forth a comment that I've made in a couple of different meetings, and so I apologize to the folks who have heard this comment and who I've told I would not repeat it again. But I appreciate your efforts to bring forth this, to gather these comments in a public forum, and so I was inspired to bring them forth in public. I believe that language is important and that words matter, so I wanted to read to you a few words from the Portland Plan. This is on page 10. And it's an off-quoted statement from the plan. Portland is a place where your future is not limited by your race, gender, sexual orientation, disability, age, income, where you were born, or where you live. My concern with that statement is the word of the use of the word disability, and that's from the section that's the equity framework. And again, I recognize, and I think the history of these words are that these specific words might be related to the federally protected classes. But if we were to rewrite that statement and use the same non-inclusive language for the other protected classes that is used represented by the word disability, the statement might read something like, Portland is a place where your future is not limited by being black or Hispanic, female, gay, disabled, too young, too old, poor, born in a foreign country, or living in East Portland. So again, I wanted to bring this forward as an opportunity for you to have that discussion if you have not had that opportunity, to consider in this specific instance and throughout the plan the use of inclusive language over exclusive language. And as such, I would encourage you in this, again, specific instance to consider changing the language to be inclusive and use the word ability instead of the word disability. And you may have heard comments from other members of the disability community. I don't know. I don't know the history of it, but again, that's just something that I wanted to bring forward to you folks tonight. So again, I'll be back in a couple weeks with a full set of comments from our commission. So thank you for the opportunity tonight.
Thank you, Alan. That concludes the testimony. If there's no one else who wants to testify, going once, twice, I think we're done with testimony today. Can we take 5 minutes real quick, and then we'll invite Eric to come up and have a discussion about what we heard today? So 5 minutes. Thank you.